And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Just wanted to let you know that you probably want to have a piece of paper and pencil handy, because there might be something you want to write down, some date, sometime, some place you really want to be. Maybe some website that you want to refer to or go take action on, because this the newscast just rolls on, and I don't repeat things more than once. So, yeah, maybe you want to make some notes. Let's start off with announcements. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team, is having a restoration this Saturday, May 10th, from 9 a.m. to noon. Now, note that's an early start time. They normally start at 10. This week, they're starting at 9, and they'll be at the Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. With lots of volunteer enthusiasm, we have made a significant dent in removing invasive non-native French broom from the park, maintaining our current work sites, and making progress on old-growth broom sites. This Saturday's broom bash will be our final project at the ranch before the lack of rain and the heat of summer make it difficult to pull and unbearably hot. It's actually raining outside right now in Santa Cruz. We have started to tackle another invasive non-native weed found at the ranch called oblong spurge. We're hopeful you can help nip it in the bud. How to get to Quail Hollow? Go up Graham Hill Road out of Santa Cruz, down into Felton, turn right at the light, go up about 2 miles, turn left on Quail Hollow Road. The park entrance is a half a mile up on the right. Meet at the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them and help restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. Broom bashing is fun. Yeah, they'll teach you how to do it. They welcome volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. It will be shine. But if things get particularly shiny, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring gloves and water. For more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. Or you could email her at redwoodrn. That's R-E-D-W-D-R-N at pacbell.net. Or visit the website, www.cruzcnps.org. That's CRUZCNPS.org. And National River Cleanup Day on the San Lorenzo River will be happening a week from Saturday, May 17th, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Celebrate National River Cleanup Day by cleaning the San Lorenzo River from the mountains to the sea. There will be three cleanup sites throughout the watershed, so pick the ones most convenient and more interesting for you and come on out. They are in Santa Cruz, in Big Basin State Park, and up at the Felton Bridge. The specific meeting location will be at the levee at the small park that has workout equipment. Parking will be available at the Ross World Market Shopping Center. So please bring a sturdy pair of gloves if you have them and layers of clothing for changing weather. Please email emerson.kanawi at ccc.ca.gov for more information. That's emerson.kanawi at ccc.ca.gov for more information. Once again, May 17th, 9 a.m. to 11 on the river. The Earth First Climbers Guild Climbing Camp will be happening June 16th through 22nd in the Driftless area. This announcement from the Earth First Climbers Guild, found on the Earth First Newswire. The Earth First Climbers Guild will host a climbing camp from June 16th to June 22nd in the Driftless area of the Upper Midwest. That is southeastern Minnesota and southwestern Wisconsin. Attendees will learn everything from the basics of ascending and descending a rope and setting anchors to the more advanced skills of platform rigging and creating pod structures. All that's left is then to use these skills to stop the corporate ecocidal monster from destroying our bioregions. What to bring? Pack what you're going to do, which is camping. So you'll need a sleeping bag, tent, rain gear, appropriate clothing for southern Minnesota in June. It's a little buggy. Good climbing shoes. These are any shoe with a stiff sole. While some people can climb in sandals, I wouldn't recommend it. About climbing barefoot, like most things in life, the fantasy is better than reality. It hurts. Gloves, bike gloves are great, but anything snug and flexible will work. Blisters equals slower climbing. Pants if you can climb and be comfortable in. This means loose or stretchy and a breathable material. Your own climbing gear if you have it. While this is certainly not required, if you have it, bring it. We should have plenty of communal gear to share, so no need to worry if you don't have your own, but the more we have, the better. Bring food. Not all Earth First Guild camps have communal kitchens, however this one will. Please consider bringing food to donate to the kitchen. Keep in mind there will be some vegans at the camp, so donations everyone can share would be greatly appreciated, so a half side of beef probably is not it. Also bring what you need to sustain yourself for a week, i.e. if you know you need a chocolate bar every day in the afternoon, throw it in your personal food bucket. They also want a donation of $25 to $50 for the week. However, no one will be turned away for lack of funds. What not to bring? Don't show up with your dog. Trust us, we love them, but climbing camp just isn't the place for dogs. Don't bring your drugs either. Like dogs, sometimes drugs are cool too, but not in a situation where lives literally depend upon a functional and focused brain. And leave your bad-attitude at home. That's your bad attitude. Everyone at Climb Camp is there to learn, and we all bring in different climbing skills and experience. We want to create an environment where everyone feels safe to learn and is supported in trying something new and potentially scary. What they will provide are knowledgeable climbers, climbing gear. Once again, have no fear if you do not have your own gear. We can provide gear for the week. They have a full kitchen serving three meals a day. Hooray! We will have more details, directions, and a training schedule as the date approaches. Where to find that? Stay tuned at efclimbers.net. That's efclimbers.net. And once again, that Guild Climbing Camp in the Minnesota, Wisconsin border region, June 16th through the 22nd. And coming up is the 2014 Earth First Rendezvous, which this year is taking place in the Klamath Knot. And that's K-N-O-T. And it's happening July 1st through July 7th. To whom it may concern, biocentric activists, distance dreamers, doers, rabble-rousers, and troublemakers, etc. Not the FBI. We are pleased to announce that this summer's annual Earth First Round River Rendezvous will be held in Southern Cascadia, the Western Oregon-California border region, from July 1st to the 7th. Save the date. This is a critical time for our movement in the Pacific Northwest. To the north, coal and oil companies are trying to use the Columbia River, a major artery of our bioregion, to export fossil fuels abroad and ship gargantuan earth-destroying equipment to the Alberta tar sands. In the far reaches of southern Cascadia, the road builders are clearing ancient oak trees and draining the wetlands of Little Lake Valley, all in the name of convenience. And as always, from the Redwood Coast to the Cascade Mountains, chainsaws threaten to destroy the biodiversity of our region's forests. Yet, in the spirit of Cascadia, we are fighting back, sitting in trees, blocking roads, marching in the streets, howling in the offices and courtrooms, and standing in solidarity with our friends who are fighting for their indigenous lands. Come for the rendezvous week, stay for a Cascadian summer, and plug into our regional campaigns. With respect to the enormous span of our region, the 2014 Round River Rendezvous will be hosted by a coalition of activists hailing from multiple hometowns and biocentric organizations. Our scouting team is still out and about, but we will most likely gather somewhere in the geological region known as the Klamath Knot. The Klamath Knot, which contains 11 wilderness areas and an amazing diversity of endemic plant species, is appropriately the meeting place of three major mountain ranges, the Southern Cascades, the Sierra Nevada, and the Coast Range. It is also rumored to be the wandering grounds of Lone Wolf OR7, residing somewhere in the Klamath Mountains. We will post more info come spring, directions by mid-June. If you've never been to a rendezvous before, come expecting fireside songs and stories, hikes in the wilderness, workshops, group meals, friendship, and all kinds of rowdiness. Cascadia loves to party. And there's Cascadian IPAs available if you buy them. And we can't wait to host for the Wild and Rowdy, the 2014 Round River Rendezvous Organizing Crew. And for more information, go to www.2014rrr.org. That's 2014rrr.org. And once again, those dates, July 1st through the 7th. Here in California, the annual quarantine of sport-harvested mussels began on May 1st. The annual quarantine on sport-harvesting of mussels gathered along the California coast began May 1st. According to Ron Chapman, director of the California Department of Public Health and state health officer, quarantine applies to all species of mussels harvested along the California coast as well as all bays and estuaries. This quarantine is in place to protect the public against poisoning that can lead to severe illness, including coma and death, said Chapman. It is critical that the public honor the quarantine because the toxins found in mussels have no known antidotes and they are not reliably destroyed by cooking. The quarantine is intended to protect the public from paralytic shellfish poisoning and domoic acid poisoning. Both of these toxins are linked to plankton consumed by filter-feeding animals such as bivalve shellfish like mussels and clams. Majority of human cases of paralytic shellfish poisoning illnesses occur between spring and fall. In Santa Cruz and Monterey counties, our home waters and advisory remains in effect to avoid eating any bivalve shellfish sport harvested in these two counties. A second advisory to avoid eating the internal organs of commercially or recreationally caught anchovies, sardines, or crabs taken from Monterey and Santa Cruz County also remains in effect. Commercially harvested shellfish are not included in the annual quarantine or the advisory for Santa Cruz and Monterey counties. That's because all commercial shellfish harvesters in California are certified by the state and subject to strict testing requirements to ensure that all oysters, clams, and mussels entering the marketplace are free of toxins. Early symptoms of paralytic shellfish poisoning include tingling of your lips and tongue, which may begin within a few minutes of eating the toxic shellfish. These symptoms are typically followed by a loss of balance, lack of muscular coordination, slurred speech, and difficulty swallowing. In severe poisonings, complete muscular paralysis and death from asphyxiation can occur. The symptoms of domoic acid poisoning, also known as amnesic shellfish poisoning, can occur within 30 minutes to 24 hours after eating toxic seafood. In mild cases, symptoms include vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal cramps, headaches, and dizziness. These symptoms disappear completely within several days. In severe cases, however, the victim may experience difficulty breathing, have confusion, disorientation, seizures, permanent loss of short-term memory, coma, and death. So don't eat that stuff. California Department of Public Health updates its warning about certain seafood caught in Monterey and Santa Cruz counties. California Department of Public Health is advising consumers not to eat the internal organs of commercially or recreationally caught anchovies, sardines, or crabs taken from Monterey and Santa Cruz counties. This health advisory is in addition to the April 4th warning not to eat recreational harvested bivalve seafood such as clams, mussels, and scallops. Dangerous levels of domoic acid continue to be detected in the species, including in the advisories, and should be present in other species. California Department of Public Health continues to collect bivalve shellfish, finfish, and crab samples from the area to monitor the level of domoic acid in seafood. There have been no reported illnesses associated with this event. The warning does not apply to commercially sold clams, mussels, or scallops or oysters from approved sources. State law permits only state-certified commercial shellfish harvesters or dealers to sell these products. Shellfish sold by certified harvesters and dealers are subject to frequent mandatory testing to monitor for toxins. And I just told you all the things that can happen if you eat that stuff. And a former Earth Liberation Front member has pled guilty to arsons, but snitches on friends for a reduced sentence in this story by Rabbit from the Earth First Newswire. On May 5th, Liam Mulholland was sentenced for his involvement in the 2003 Earth Liberation Front arson. Mulholland pleaded guilty to setting fire to a house in Mystic Forest housing development in Ann Arbor, Michigan on March 21, 2003. Spray painted on the garage of a neighboring house were the words Earth Liberation Front, No Sprawl. In Michigan, the mandatory minimum for this kind of property destruction is 5 years in prison. However, the government has requested a reduced sentence because of Mulholland's cooperation with the federal government. In other words, he's a big snitch. From his plea agreement and the government's sentencing memorandum, it seems Mulholland fed the feds a lot of information. He claimed non-involvement in several more Earth Liberation Front and Animal Liberation Front actions, including arsons that destroyed two homes at another housing development in Michigan in June of 2003, using incendiary devices to destroy chicken delivery trucks in Bloomington, Indiana in May of 2002, and an arson at a housing development in Bloomington, Indiana in June of 2002, and a failed attempt to set fire to a pumping station at Stanwood, Michigan in September of 2003. Mulholland also provided feds with the names of other activists with whom he carried out these actions, as well as where and how they traveled, where and when they planned and discussed their actions, what they purchased for the actions, how they disposed of the purchased items, and how they carried out each action. The government is requesting a sentence of 18 months for Mulholland, a reduction of 42 months from the state's mandatory minimum. Because of his cooperation, will aid the government in cracking down on other Earth Liberation and Animal Liberation Front suspects. The government has determined that the defendant's cooperation to date amounts to substantial assistance in the investigation or prosecution of others. The agreement also asserts that because of his cooperation, all his charges related to the other admitted ELF and ALF arsons will be dismissed. And it seems that Mulholland isn't the only one snitching. The sentencing memorandum states that although Mulholland often asserted that he was simply along for the ride during these actions, the feds have received contradictory information. According to witnesses, it was the defendant who had the expertise to construct incendiary devices and did so for both the arson of the delivery trucks at Sims Poultry as well as the attempted arson of the Ice Mountain pumping station. If anyone has pictures of Liam Mulholland or more information about him, please send it to thecollective@earthfirstjournal.org. That's collective@earthfirstjournal.org, so the word can be spread, the pictures put up, and activists and activist groups can be on guard for the presence of this snitch once he gets out of jail. Moving to Russia, the Kanti take action to stop road construction through a sacred site. In this story by Ugya from IC Magazine, as found on the Earth First Newswire. And I believe that's Intercontinental Cry Magazine. On April 28th, representatives of the Kanti community of Nizhnevartovsk district of Siberia, about 1,200 miles east of Moscow, blocked operations of the Veryaganeft Oil Company, which is building a road through a sacred lichen grove to an oil deposit on the Kanti's ancestral lands. Local residents erected a chum, or Siberian nomad tent, to block the passage of the company's equipment and are not planning to remove it until the oil workers leave. According to community representative Alexander Ipin, the Aegon Lichen Grove is a sanctuary and a place where the Kanti have worshipped the patroness of the Aegon River for many centuries. The community's lawyer, Galina Obolinskaya, who was also a member of the city council of Rudzhny, says that representatives of the company are unable to produce the necessary permits for the operation, therefore, their actions are unlawful. The oil company has neither the legal nor the moral right to work on these lands. These are territories of traditional nature use. Indigenous peoples assert their right to live on their traditional lands where their ancestors lived. According to Obenskaya, the Veryaganeft and other oil companies intend to dispose of waste in a tailings pond that's located in the immediate vicinity of the Kanti's ancestral lands, threatening mass contamination of the territory. In addition, bulldozers have already removed the lichen layer, which is the main food source for local reindeer. The recovery of lichen takes decades. Since the beginning of the year, oil spills have also occurred in the protected area. After the action by community members, representatives of the oil company came to the site for talks. However, when no compromise could be reached, oil workers attempted to file a complaint with the police, alleging that the actions of the local residents are causing the company to suffer losses. After reviewing the situation, however, the police decided that there were no grounds for filing a civil complaint. The company refused to give any comments, noting that this case is being dealt with in court. Meanwhile, Kanti from the indigenous village of Veryagin established a civil organization, Kranitali, the Keepers, to defend their rights, lands, and interests in disputes with local extractive companies. Conflict between oil companies and the residents of the Kanti's ancestral lands began late last year following the 2012 sale of the Martiloskovye field on Kanti land. This year, oil workers started to extract oil from the deposit, prompting construction of a road through the lichen grove and the ancestral lands. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. Horse Butte and other areas of the Hebgen Basin in antennae are now teeming with about 350 to 400 of the gentle giants, and though these are smaller numbers than we are used to seeing here this time of year, each day these herds bring more new gifts of baby buffalo into the world. On Monday, three Montana Department of Livestock agents harassed wild buffalo off the habitat in the Denny Creek South Fork area of the basin, proving that brucellosis is not the issue. Nearly 60 wild buffalo, mostly female-led family groups, have been here for weeks on private lands that won't host cows until mid-June. Interestingly, this day, the agents set their sight on six bull bison. Monday's hazing operations began with three Montana Department of Livestock inspectors on horseback attempting to move six enormous bulls off the Pova's Deepwell Ranch. Eventually, the bulls took off with the agents chasing to catch up. After the bulls crossed the South Fork of the Madison River with three shouting agents hot on their heels, they encountered a family group with some newborn calves who were also caught up in the hazing. The agents chased them all down the Gallatin National Forest Madison Arm Road, cattle-free public land and critical wildlife habitat where wild bison should have precedent over livestock interests. The two tiny calves tried desperately to keep up with their moms and family. As the haze proceeded, the agents picked up more buffalo, pursuing them down muddy roads, over felled trees, splaying branches, and through thick, mucky areas along the Madison Arm of Hebgen Lake. The agents wouldn't think of making their horses move through some of the areas they tried to force the buffalo through. The buffalo were resistant to hazing, losing patience with these pesky humans and growing tired. Calves desperately needed to stop, nurse, and rest their tiny new legs, but these cowboys are relentless. Montana Department of Livestock Inspector Shane Grube broke off from the haze for some fresh ones to liven things up. He went after two enormous bull buffalo that were minding their own business and well within legal habitat, pushing them into the group with the intent of getting the moms and calves revved up and moving. This plan backfired. At the water's edge, the agents were hoping to push them across the lake, but the buffalo were finished being chased. The two bulls they had just forced into the water placed themselves between the agents and their family. It was a standoff, and no matter how much the agents yipped and yelled, the buffalo were determined not to be pushed any further. At one point, one of the fresh bulls decided he'd had enough harassment, made a lightning-quick about-face, and ran through the horsemen and away. The agents soon decided to call it quits for the day. On Tuesday, they came back with reinforcements. Six government-funded cowboys were in the field, five from the Montana Department of Livestock and one game warden from Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. The haze again started at the Denny Creek South Fork area, and as soon as the buffalo saw the horsemen coming for them, they bolted. Sadly, most of the buffalo alive today have known hazing all of their lives. Three separate family groups with newborn calves and one pregnant buffalo who was lagging behind the rest were far ahead of the agents running for all their worth to escape the bullies trying to close the distance. Tuesday's haze went much like Monday's, with many of the same buffalo being harassed again through the same areas. Mama buffalo were rightfully getting more aggravated with the agents trying to defend their babies and a few threatened bluff charges when agents wouldn't allow the cows to stop and nurse. The agent's ideal plan is to push them all over to Horse Butte so that when Montana's end of tolerance comes on May 15th, the buffalo are all in a single location and easier to manipulate. That's the agent's mistake, assuming buffalo will behave like livestock, and that's the beauty of wild buffalo. They aren't livestock. They are self-willed wanderers, and they are never lost, knowing well the path to return to their chosen ground. Today, the agents are gone and aren't likely to be back until next week, when it will all begin again. And that's the update from the Buffalo Field Campaign for this week. The Buffalo Field Campaign's address is P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana. The zip code is 59758. If you have any questions, go to their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org and check it out. Almost anything you need to know about wild buffalo in Montana is there. If you have any questions, do give them a call at 406-646-0070. That's 406-646-0070, and they are looking for volunteers for the summer. Once again, the webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign, and do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And the first wolf seen in Iowa in 85 years has been killed. This story from the Earth First Newswire. According to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, the first wolf seen in Iowa since 1925 was shot this February by a coyote hunter. DNA tests proved that the animal was a wolf, adding to other big animals seen to be returning to the area, including black bear and mountain lion. A healthy 65 to 70-pound female, the wolf was roaming Buchanan County, Iowa. Its DNA suggests it came from the Great Lakes region, likely Wisconsin or Minnesota. The hunter was not sighted, even though wolves are a protected species in Iowa. According to Iowa Department of Natural Resources Conservation Officer Scott Kinseth, the hunter shot the wolf thinking it was a coyote, brought the wolf in to be tested, and complied with the officers. Kinseth spread the message, "They are protected animals. We know they are here. Make sure of your target. If in doubt, don't shoot." Iowa had two native species of wolf, the Great Plains wolf, which hunted bison, and the timber wolf, before settlers pushing west systematically slaughtered them and drove them from the land. In the rest of the United States, the wolf population dropped so low that wolves were certified an endangered species the year the Endangered Species Act was signed in 1974. However, the gray wolf was delisted in 2009, and extremely controversial wolf hunts have been incited in several states, including Idaho, Montana, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. While conservationists grieve for the loss of this great critter, many take heart in the fact that the wolves are indeed returning. Department of Natural Resources fur bearer biologist Vince Evelsizer says, "I think what's been interesting about this is that it just further points out that larger animals are capable of covering larger distances. So things like moose, black bear, mountain lion, and wolves now have been documented to show up occasionally in Iowa." And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced each Thursday evening in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening. If you'd like to listen to a rebroadcast of this or previous Earth First Updates, I suggest that you go to radio4all.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net. You can also hear a rebroadcast of this program tomorrow afternoon right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 3 p.m. 101.3 FM in Santa Cruz. If you're in the Moscow, Idaho area on Monday nights at 9:30, listen to the Earth First Update on KRFP 90.3 FM. That's their new high power frequency, and hopefully they will be going to high power soon. Just to put in a word for radioforall.net, those folks need money. They subsist on your donations, and they have been for many years a place where independent producers of programming like myself can share our works with the world. Go to radioforall.net, and in the upper portion of the webpage, you will find a way to donate to radioforall.net. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz for another edition of the Earth First Update.